Are you okay? We'll start?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Morning. I hope the mic is working. You can hear. Everybody's okay. Welcome. Thank you all for coming. It's very nice to see everyone here. As you know, this group has a has an interesting personality. Many more people show up than RSVP. So if somebody comes in and they're standing over there and there's a seat next to you, try to get their attention and invite them to come over and sit by you. And we'll try to get everybody seated. In July 2006, at a forum hosted by the Haiti Working Group, Haitian poet historian Jean-Claude Martineau spoke, and he said that Haiti is the only country in the world with a last name. He said, when you see Haiti written, it always is Haiti, comma, poorest country in the Western Hemisphere. Sadly, since 2006, and conditions in Haiti have grown somewhat worse, particularly since the tragic events of September, when Haiti suffered direct hits by four hurricane and tropical storms. The destruction of agricultural land, crops, and food reserves have caused a growing number of Haitians to face the prospect of starvation. And indeed, last week, the Associated Press reported that 26 severely malnourished Haitian children had died and that more deaths were imminent unless help arrived quickly. In Port-au-Prince, the storms fatally weakened two poorly built school buildings that collapsed, causing the death of 91 children and the injury of dozens of others. This tragedy highlighted the fact that as a result of poverty in Haiti, often buildings are built without the involvement of structural engineers or appropriately trained personnel. In Gonaï, the consequences of the environmental degradation of the land around that city are still visible in the fact that there is estimated something like 3 million tons of mud that still clog the city, and this mud is full of debris, including parts of cars that were washed up in the mudslides. The massive deforestation of Haiti has deprived the country of vegetation needed to control erosion. This situation is made worse by the reliance of poor people on charcoal as the main heating fuel. Across Haiti, poverty has bred a growth of crime and desperation that's brought an increase in violence. Just recently, Amnesty International did a report on the increase in sexual violence against women and girls, which it termed pervasive. In the wake of Haiti's recent tragedies, President Préval has called for Haitians to come together and begin to rebuild. But is there a realistic expectation? Are there strategies that can be used to make this a reality? We brought together a distinguished group of people this morning to talk about that issue. First, we are greatly honored by the presence of the former Prime Minister of Haiti, Jacques-Édouard Alexis. You all have his bio, which is indeed very distinguished, but I want to call attention to a couple of things. He is more than a political leader. He is a man with real credentials in the area of development. He has a degree in agricultural engineering. He has served as Minister of Education and Minister of the Interior. He currently heads a new organization that's interested in promoting research and development in Haiti and education in general. We have with us today also Stephen Horblett, who is Director of External Relations for the Creative Associates International, a man with a long, long history of working on Haitian affairs, and someone who's been an advisor to our Haiti Working Group since the beginning. And we have Professor Charles Call from American University, who we are very fortunate to have with us this year as a Jennings Randolph Fellow. So we'll begin with the present. Oh, and one more, I can't forget. An old friend of ours and good colleague, Professor Francois Pierre-Louis from Queens College, City University of New York, who's going to be helping us this morning in a variety of ways. Professor Pierre-Louis has appeared here before, and he has also been an advisor and a good friend. So without any more delay, I will introduce to you the former Prime Minister of Haiti.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mesdames, Messieurs, membres du personnel de la mission diplomatique d'Haïti, distingués invités.
Ladies and gentlemen, members of the Haitian diplomatic mission and invited guests.
Mes premiers mots sont pour exprimer à Monsieur Robert Perito mes sincères remerciements de m'avoir invité à participer à l'activité d'aujourd'hui. Ces propos s'étendent aussi au professeur Robert McGuire, dont les conseils judicieux m'ont grandement aidé. Permettez-moi également d'effectuer une référence spéciale à Monsieur l'ambassadeur d'Haïti à Washington et au personnel de l'ambassade, dont l'accompagnement, ainsi que celui des responsables de la United States Peace Institution, m'ont été précieux.
I would first like to thank Mr. Robert Perito for inviting me here today, and also Professor Robert McGuire, whose advice have been very helpful. Let me also thank the, in a special way, the ambassador of Haiti in Washington, Ambassador Raymond Joseph, and also the members of the U.S. Peace Institute for their support and help.
Mesdames, Messieurs, je me réjouis de me trouver ce matin en votre aimable compagnie pour discuter de questions et problématiques qui nous sont d'intérêt commun. Nonobstant son caractère non officiel, ma visite à votre prestigieuse institution constitue une occasion opportune pour promouvoir la coopération et les relations d'amitié entre les États-Unis d'Amérique et le peuple haïtien. D'entrée de jeu, il me plaît donc de souligner la convergence des idéaux de liberté et de justice auxquels adhèrent depuis leur naissance ces deux nations, qui chacune à sa façon et avec ses contradictions propres ont contribué à la propagation des droits de l'homme dans l'hémisphère. Sur cette base, l'histoire de nos pays respectifs devra continuer à chercher des voies d'affirmation compatibles avec toutes les initiatives d'approfondissement de la démocratie comme un droit absolu des citoyens. De même que la défense des droits de l'homme comme une obligation incontournable des dirigeants en ce début du 21e siècle. Telle est d'ailleurs, à mes yeux, l'une des importantes assises idéologiques de votre institution. Telle est également le fondement du dialogue que je viens engager avec vous ce matin. Et de ce point de vue, je suis persuadé que nos échanges s'avéreront d'une grande fécondité.
Ladies and gentlemen, I thank you for having me today to discuss some important issues that we share in common. Although my presence at your prestigious institution is not an official visit, it is, however, a wonderful opportunity to promote cooperation and friendly relationship between the United States and Haiti. First of all, I'm pleased to highlight the convergence of the principles of freedom and justice that are shared by our two nations, each in its own ways and contradictions. Principles of human rights that we contribute to spread in this hemisphere and around the world. At that level, our respective countries should continue to search for new ways to reinforce democracy as an absolute necessity and the respect of human rights as an obligation for our leaders in the beginning of the 21st century. Such are, to me, one of the most important ideological foundations of your institution. Trust is also the basis of the dialogue that I'm engaging with you this morning. I'm convinced that our exchanges will be very productive.
Monsieur Perito, je me suis empressé de répondre à votre invitation avec la conviction de quelqu'un qui nourrit la prétention de connaître Haïti, ses forces et ses faiblesses, pour avoir occupé des postes de haut niveau dans l'administration publique, tout récemment encore celui de Premier ministre, et dans les milieux académiques, y compris ceux de doyen de faculté et de recteur d'université. J'appelle cet avantage celui de la perspective du dedans. Aujourd'hui, j'ai le privilège d'être directeur exécutif du Centre national de formation et de recherche, le CNAREF, une institution récente qui ambitionne d'être une technostructure d'appui à la gouvernance et un incubateur de renouvellement de la pensée sociopolitique, ainsi qu'un laboratoire dédié à une réingénierie sociale pour la réhabilitation de l'homme et de l'espace haïtien. Ce statut me fournit l'avantage de la perspective du dehors.
Mr. Perito, I responded quickly to your invitation with the conviction of someone who knows Haiti, its strengths and its weaknesses, because of the high functions that I have had the privilege to hold as a public servant, as recently as being Haiti's prime minister, and also in the academic field as a dean and president of Kiskeya University. I'm presently the executive director of the National Center for Research and Education, a new institution which aspires to be a technostructure of support to governance and an incubator for renewal of socio-political thinking in Haiti.
Mesdames, Messieurs, que ce soit à travers le prisme du dedans, que ce soit à travers celui du dehors, le besoin le plus pressant auquel, selon moi, Haïti fait face aujourd'hui se trouve dans l'impératif absolu de se placer sur la voie d'une gouvernance renouvelée et bien inspirée. En effet, il faut noter en tout premier lieu que notre vision de la bonne gouvernance prend assise sur notre conviction quant à la nécessité de pratiquer une approche endogène de notre développement. Néanmoins, évitant de nous enfoncer dans toute autarcie stérile et utopique, nous évertuerons à solliciter, quand il le faut, l'appui de la communauté internationale. Une telle démarche devra toutefois s'inscrire dans le cadre d'un alignement sur nos orientations, sur nos priorités et sur nos feuilles de route. Autrement, l'année prochaine et les années après, les mêmes actions insignifiantes, sans impact durable sur la qualité de vie des Haïtiens, et les mêmes appels à l'aide humanitaire viendront hanter nos consciences avec leur cortège d'illusions, de frustrations et d'indignité. Ce constat met en évidence la nécessité d'opérer une refonte de fond en comble de l'architecture de la société haïtienne en raison des iniquités de toutes sortes qui l'enfoncent dans une spirale de dégradation.
Ladies and gentlemen, the most pressing issue that my country is facing today is the need to place Haiti on the path to renewed and inspired governance. Our vision of good governance is based on the conviction that it is necessary to approach the economic development of Haiti as an endogenous journey, without embarking in an autarky that would be utopist and fruitless. We would solicit the assistance of the international community when necessary. Such an approach should be in agreement with our orientation and our priorities. Otherwise, it would be an endless continuation of the failed attempts of the past that have not had any significant impact on the quality of life of the Haitian people. This leads me to the issue of that we need a complete overhaul of Haitian society in regard to the flagrant iniquities that are pushing it even deeper in the spiral of degradation.
De ce point de vue, par-delà la férocité des cataclysmes naturels qui frappent régulièrement Haïti, et récemment encore, les quatre cyclones qui l'ont dévasté dans l'intervalle d'un mois, il nous faut reconnaître qu'un véritable désastre est installé au sein de notre société depuis des décennies. Il s'agit du fléau de l'exclusion séculairement entretenue par un type d'État indifférent à la situation inhumaine infligée à la plupart de nos compatriotes. La marginalité constitue en effet le lot de la majorité des Haïtiens, des Haïtiennes, à qui sont refusés les droits élémentaires susceptibles d'assurer leur inclusion dans la citoyenneté. Que plus de 500 000 enfants, peut-être moins aujourd'hui, en âge de fréquenter l'école, soient maintenus en dehors du système éducatif, constitue une illustration du caractère discriminatoire de l'État haïtien et des élites, toutes tendances confondues, qui le dirigent depuis maintenant plus de 200 années. Ces situations d'ignominie sans nom et sans nombre caractérisent l'organisation et le fonctionnement de l'État traditionnel en Haïti. En effet, le leadership du pays s'est toujours évertué à bloquer, souvent dans le sang, l'émergence et la floraison dans notre société d'un projet démocratique porteur de bien-être pour tous les Haïtiens.
Beyond the tragedy of the natural catastrophes that have struck regularly Haiti and recently again with the four hurricanes, within a month that also have devastated the country, we have to recognize that a more formidable disaster is ingrained in our society. It is the scourge of exclusion, maintained by a state unmoved by the inhuman conditions inflicted on the majority of our fellow citizens. Marginality is in effect the fate reserved to the large majority to whom is denied the elementary rights likely to ensure their inclusion into the society. The fact that more than 500,000 children are maintained outside of the national education system is a clear indication of the discriminatory nature of the Haitian state and the elite that have been in power for the past 200 years. This dreadful situation characterizes the way the traditional state functions in Haiti. The emergence of a democratic project in our society that will be able to bear a well-being for the Haitian people are at the heart of the issue. But this process has always been crushed violently by our own leaders.
En outre, nos amis de la communauté internationale, je dirais nos amis entre guillemets, doivent à leur tour reconnaître que les malheurs d'Haïti sont exacerbés par les désastreuses politiques de développement qui ont été imposées par les institutions financières multilatérales à un pays où presque la totalité du budget d'investissement est d'origine externe. Il leur faudra se résoudre à cesser de faire transiter la plus grande partie de l'aide par des organismes non gouvernementaux qui trop souvent se comportent sur le territoire national comme de véritables entités étatiques autonomes n'ayant aucun compte à rendre aux autorités nationales.
Our friends, quote unquote, from the international community must also recognize that Haiti's misfortunes were often exacerbated by the disastrous development strategies imposed by the multilateral financial institutions to a country where the quasi-totality of the investment budget comes from outside. They will have to work, the international community will have to work more with the Haitian government instead of allowing the biggest portion of the economic assistance to the NGOs that are often behave like unregulated entities having nothing to report to the elected officials.
De telles pratiques contribuent ostensiblement à un affaiblissement de l'État ainsi qu'à une déperdition de nos ressources humaines irrésistiblement attirées par les alléchantes conditions salariales des ONG. Dans un tel environnement, la perte d'estime et de confiance collective ne tarde jamais à se manifester. Et ainsi, l'État s'inscrit inexorablement dans un processus d'érosion que ses partenaires externes, responsables en partie de cet affaiblissement, ne se gêneront guère de lui reprocher pour justifier leur refus de s'engager dans une coopération équilibrée.
Such practices clearly undermine the authority of the state and contribute also to a loss in human resources that are attracted by the salaries that are offered by the NGOs. In this environment, it doesn't take long for the population to be unsatisfied with the performance of the state.
Mesdames, Messieurs, l'État traditionnel haïtien repose sur une double asymétrie sociopolitique. D'une part, de cuisantes disparités entre ses principales composantes internes et d'autre part, une fracture gigantesque inhérente aux relations avec ses partenaires externes. De telles structures le rendent inapte à susciter l'éclosion d'une société démocratique et moderne. Elles constituent à la fois une injustice criante à l'endroit de la majorité de nos compatriotes et une entrave de taille à toute perspective de modernisation de la société haïtienne.
Ladies and gentlemen, the traditional Haitian state functions on two socio-political dimensions, a huge disparity among its population and a chasm with the international partners. These two contradictory dimensions do not allow it to develop into a modern democratic society. It is an injustice to the majority of our population and it blocks all efforts toward a modern society.
En effet, dans une société où les 20% les moins défavorisés concentrent en leurs mains plus de 70% de la richesse nationale, il s'avère complètement impossible d'assurer l'accès pour la majorité à la jouissance des droits sociaux et démocratiques. C'est sur cette toile de fond qu'il faudra articuler la construction d'un véritable projet démocratique national.
In fact, in a society where 20% of the population controls 70% of the national resources, it is impossible for the majority to enjoy its full democratic and social rights. It is in this context that we need to redefine a new democratic, a national democratic project.
Mesdames, Messieurs, sans une claire compréhension de cet impératif, il vous serait difficile de saisir pourquoi Haïti est affublé du titre peu enviable de pays le moins avancé de l'Amérique. Néanmoins, la coopération externe a de tout temps constitué une orientation importante associée à ma gouvernance. Ainsi, dès le début de mon deuxième mandat, de mon deuxième passage à la primature, je devrais dire, en qualité de Premier ministre, j'ai convoqué une réunion du groupe principal des bailleurs, avec l'autorisation du chef de l'État, son Excellence René Préval, le jour même de mon installation, soit le 9 juin 2006. 45 jours plus tard, le 25 juillet 2006, Haïti recevait les partenaires de la communauté internationale à la première conférence internationale sur le développement économique et social à Port-au-Prince. À cette occasion, la proposition haïtienne pour assurer le développement du pays était formulée dans un document qui identifiait les grands chantiers permettant d'opérer la relance démocratique et économique, de faciliter la refondation de l'État comme instrument autonome des Haïtiens pour la reconquête de leur souveraineté nationale, ainsi que la reprise en main de leur destinée collective.
Without a clear understanding of this dilemma that I mentioned previously, it is impossible to understand why Haiti is classified as the least developed country in the Americas. As soon as I took office, became Prime Minister in 2006, I took upon myself to develop a better collaboration with the international community. The same day I was installed as Prime Minister on June 9th, I met with the donors community, and in July 2006, we had our first donors conference in Haiti. At that conference, we presented a white paper that identified the priorities of my government and the actions that we needed to take to launch the democratic process and the reform of the state as an autonomous structure to help the Haitian people regain their sovereignty.
Cette conférence devait susciter l'affirmation d'un leadership national en matière de développement. Leadership grandement affaibli sous le gouvernement de transition. Il m'était apparu indiqué à la circonstance de proposer de nouvelles modalités de coopération, par entre autres l'établissement d'un véritable dialogue entre Haïti et les partenaires internationaux.
The conference in July 2006 was to put the state back in its role of leadership and to create, to develop and development, a leadership that we had lost with the transitional government of Prime Minister Latochi. The aim of the conference was also to establish a new partnership with our international donors.
Comme je le soulignais à l'époque, il faut rompre avec les pratiques passées. Il faut cesser de réfléchir chacun de son côté. Il faut penser ensemble. Il n'y a pas de contrainte qui soit propre aux partenaires de la communauté internationale. Il n'y a pas de contrainte qui soit propre à Haïti. Il n'y a que des contraintes au développement du pays. Ces contraintes sont connues. La déclaration de Paris les identifie bien et propose un schéma constructif pour agir.
As I said at the beginning of this, we said that we had to break away from the old thinking. We have to start anew. There is no previous contract that we have to maintain. And especially we have to look at the Declaration of Paris and to revise it.
Dans cette perspective, le gouvernement que j'ai eu l'honneur de diriger a déposé en novembre 2007 le document de stratégie nationale pour la croissance et la réduction de la pauvreté, le DSNCRP. Il représente la programmation à moyen terme de l'action gouvernementale et le cadre de référence pour le dialogue avec les partenaires de la communauté internationale. Pour réussir un saut qualitatif tel qu'inscrit dans le document, il nous faut avoir l'ambition de saisir la fenêtre d'opportunité créée par le retour à la constitutionnalité, la mise en place des institutions de l'État et la mobilisation des Haïtiens et des Haïtiennes pour marquer de manière irréversible l'histoire de notre pays. Les défis sont considérables. Impulser une dynamique forte de rattrapage des objectifs du millénaire pour le développement, doter le pays d'une économie moderne, moderniser l'État dans toutes ses composantes institutionnelles et mettre notre créativité et notre patrimoine culturel au service du développement du pays.
It was in this context that my government created the Poverty Reduction Plan, Poverty Reduction Strategy, which is called DNSCRP. This document presented at the plans of the government for the short term. It also addressed our relationship with our partners. As we said in the document, we needed to make a qualitative leap. We have to be able to dream on a grand scale and take the opportunity that is offered to us to return the country to the state of democratic rule. The document also addressed the issue of building state institutions, the mobilization of Haitian citizens to achieve the millennium goals of development, establish a modern economy, modernize the state, and take advantage of our cultural capital to develop our society.
Mesdames, Messieurs, plus que jamais, il m'apparaissait essentiel de donner un coup de barre décisif à la mise en œuvre de cette nouvelle stratégie. C'est dans cet esprit que j'avais procédé, avec l'autorisation du président Préval, à la convocation d'une nouvelle conférence internationale pour la fin avril 2008 à Port-au-Prince. Il me semblait, et me semble encore indispensable pour le gouvernement, ce gouvernement, entre autres, de confirmer une entente pluripartite sur le financement triennal de la stratégie. Il me semble également important de convenir des moyens pour sécuriser les engagements et assurer la prévisibilité de l'aide en matière d'appui budgétaire 2008-2011. Et enfin, il y a lieu de mettre au point un programme de transition visant l'application des principes de la Déclaration de Paris.
Ladies and gentlemen, we were on our way to concretize the plans that were in the document with the convocation of a new donors conference in April 2008. The objective of that conference was to confirm the financing of the poverty reduction plan, find ways to lock in the commitments and secure financing for the 2008-2011 budget, finalize the programs that would transit us out of the Paris Declaration.
L'ajout de la conférence prévue pour le mois d'avril 2008 s'avérait d'une extrême importance. Des engagements pour un total de 4 milliards de dollars avaient été escomptés dans un tel contexte. Vous connaissez, mesdames, messieurs, le reste de cette histoire exaltante qui s'est abruptement arrêtée avec le vote de censure infligé à mon gouvernement le 12 avril 2008.
The April 2008 conference was crucial to us. We were already pledged, there were already $4 billion pledged for the financing of the plan. Ladies and gentlemen, you know the rest of the story. The whole project was stopped when Parliament gave my government a no-confidence vote on April 12, 2008.
Aujourd'hui, il me plaît de réitérer en votre présence notre attachement indéfectible aux principes inhérents à une coopération équilibrée et respectueuse de l'intérêt de toutes les parties qui y sont engagées. À cette fin, il convient entre autres de assurer sans équivoque l'expression du leadership national de la promotion et la protection de l'intérêt national en matière de coopération. Il convient également de construire sur les échiquiers internes et externes de solides passerelles de dialogue destinées à mettre au point respectivement un nouveau pacte pour la réconciliation nationale ainsi qu'un pacte international de solidarité. Ces deux instruments devront être inclusifs. Il représente des conditions sine qua non à la réussite des changements nécessaires au saut qualitatif. Il convient de conférer à l'État le rôle central de guide, de régulateur et d'ordonnateur des initiatives de développement qui ont cours sur le territoire national. Il convient de s'assurer de faire converger et de rendre compatibles les initiatives de tous les intervenants gouvernementaux et non gouvernementaux, tout en les rendant imputables de l'atteinte des résultats auprès de la population. Et il convient enfin de mettre en branle des efforts susceptibles de contribuer à la diversification de notre partenariat en élargissant le pacte de solidarité à de nouveaux partenaires, tout en renforçant les liens avec ceux qui sont depuis longtemps engagés en Haïti.
Today, I would like to once more affirm our commitment to a balanced cooperation with the international community, a cooperation that is based on mutual respect so that we can provide the necessary national leadership to promote and protect our national interests, build the bridges that are the internal and external bridges that are important to put together a new agreement that would lead to national reconciliation as well as a new international solidarity with our country. These are important levers that will help us make the qualitative leap to progress. We need also to restore the authority of the state so that it can play its regulatory role and promote national development. Make sure that governmental and non-governmental actions are coordinated so that the results can meet the expectations of the population. We have to pull our efforts together to reinforce our collaboration with our partners, while we also look for new partners in this endeavor.
Mesdames, Messieurs, Haïti, on le répète assez, se trouve à la croisée des chemins et requiert une approche novatrice pour assurer son développement. Sans une pleine émancipation des couches marginalisées, il ne sera guère possible de voir l'affirmation d'une véritable classe d'affaires nationale. Sur cette base, nous attachons une importance de premier ordre au développement des communautés périphériques dont la mise en valeur passe par une politique bien inspirée de décentralisation. C'est avec ce souci que je me suis évertué à lancer, à mon deuxième passage à la primature, une expérience de développement régional par un soutien octroyé aux collectivités territoriales. Le programme à impact communal, le PIC, mis au point en cette occasion, a permis de susciter une effervescence dans les zones reculées et traditionnellement livrées à leur sort dans les communautés du pays en dehors. Il est certainement de mise de penser à une systématisation de cette expérience en y engageant des fonds plus importants et en l'étendant à un plus grand nombre de collectivités territoriales. Notre vision du développement passe immanquablement par l'insertion des populations et régions défavorisées dans l'agenda d'affirmation de l'État.
Ladies and gentlemen, Haiti is at a crossroad and the country needs bold new approaches to guarantee its development. Without a full emancipation of the marginalized, it would be impossible to affirm a new class of business people. That is why we paid a lot of attention to the outlying areas. If we don't valorize them by having a decentralized policy, the country will never develop. During my second term as Prime Minister, we created a national program to decentralize state authority. The Communal Impact Program, PIC, was welcomed by the communities that have been traditionally neglected. It was important to systematize the program by giving it additional funding and extend it to all the municipalities. We hope... I think that's it. Yeah.
Oui. Dans cette perspective, les compatriotes de la diaspora sont appelés à jouer un rôle majeur en raison de l'attachement qu'ils manifestent à l'endroit de leur pays en général et de leur localité d'origine en particulier. Il faut mettre pleinement à profit le riche réservoir de ressources expertes et de capitaux détenus par ces compatriotes vivant à l'extérieur qui n'ont jamais cessé de fournir la preuve de leur fidélité à la mère patrie, où l'an dernier, ils ont envoyé 1,6 milliard de dollars américains, comparativement aux 500 millions de dollars de l'aide internationale. L'implication de la diaspora, de la conception à l'exécution, constitue une dimension à part entière du rêve de la reconstruction nationale. Sa contribution au développement de notre société exercera indéniablement un impact considérable sur la stabilisation de l'échiquier sociopolitique national, avec d'énormes répercussions positives sur la paix dans la région et dans l'hémisphère. C'est donc dire que pour garantir le bien-être de tous, il nous incombe de manière impérative d'impulser une dynamique de notre affirmation et de notre développement en étroite connexion avec la mise en valeur des ressources de notre patrimoine naturel et culturel. Je soutiens le point de vue que cette démarche interpelle aussi bien les citoyens et les citoyennes d'Haïti que l'ensemble de la communauté internationale.
We hope that expatriates in the diaspora will continue to play a more important role in this program by working in their region. We hope that the social and human capital that the diaspora has will contribute toward the development of Haiti. The diaspora has already shown its goodwill in terms of its contribution to the country, and it is definitely a key partner in the national development. By having the contribution of the diaspora, we'll be able to stabilize our society and help bring about a level of peace in the country.
Mesdames, Messieurs, les catastrophes récurrentes qui frappent Haïti fragilisent et décapitalisent sa population, détruisent ses infrastructures et sa production agricole, ne sont pas une fatalité, mais plutôt le résultat d'une gouvernance déficiente. La direction de la protection civile a présenté au début du mois d'octobre 2008 le dernier bilan des dégâts causés par le passage des ouragans. Environ 800 personnes mortes, plus de 300 autres portées disparues, 16 500 familles sinistrées. De plus, environ 230 000 maisons ont été détruites et 85 000 autres endommagées. Dans ce décor d'angoisse et de souffrance, les infrastructures de prévention et de gestion des crues nous font cruellement défaut. Notre espace de vie est mal aménagé. Nos bassins versants mal protégés. Même si nous savons qu'il nous faudra compter avec des saisons cycloniques plus longues, plus dévastatrices, donc plus coûteuses, il nous faut développer la culture de gestion des risques dans tous les lieux de vie, dans une perspective de sécurité humaine. Voilà, mesdames, messieurs, des pistes de coopération et d'investissement.
Ladies and gentlemen, the recurrent disasters that have hit the country have further weakened it. Our infrastructure, but also our agricultural capacity. These disasters also contributed to our lack of good governance. The Bureau of Civil Protection in Haiti presented the following report regarding the latest disasters. 800 people were killed from the hurricanes, 300 were missing, 16,500 families were homeless. In addition to that, the hurricane destroyed 23,000 homes, 85,000 other homes suffered damages. These emergencies make us realize how unprepared we are to face any catastrophe in the country. Our environment is not well managed. We have to develop better means to manage our environment, our capacity to deal with crises, and to guarantee human lives. These are, ladies and gentlemen, important issues that we need the cooperation and foreign investments.
Mesdames, Messieurs, dans notre vision, les facteurs de contrainte, chaque fois qu'il le sera possible, doivent être transformés en facteurs d'opportunité. D'une certaine manière, l'étage de la reconstruction offre une occasion pour accrocher le pays haïtien à une vision grandiose de son affirmation. Haïti se doit de divorcer d'avec les pratiques d'un développement atomisé, axé essentiellement sur la bonne volonté de ses bienfaiteurs. Elle se doit de reprendre la tradition historique qui l'a conduit si souvent durant son histoire à la fois glorieuse et tragique, à entreprendre des initiatives gigantesques qui ont su susciter l'émerveillement à la grandeur de la planète. Il nous faut renouer avec cette riche tradition léguée par les fondateurs de notre patrie, ainsi que l'intrépidité légendaire de certaines figures de proue dont l'œuvre de bâtisseurs nationaux constitue une source d'inspiration sans limite. Nous pensons entre autres à Henri Christophe, à Dumas Estimé. En nous appelant à suivre les traces exemplaires de leurs pas, nous nous appliquerons à clamer inlassablement que la renaissance d'Haïti doit constituer une nécessité pour l'ensemble de ses fils et ses filles résolument engagés dans la matérialisation du grand rêve national.
Haiti has to divorce itself from the anarchic way of looking at development. We have to renew the historic tradition that has made us a glorious and historic population. We have to go back to our heroes and inspire from their work, the work that they have done in the past, such as Henri Christophe, Thomas Estimé. We have also to apply in the Renaissance of Haiti the necessity to bring together all the its children and to engage in the in realizing this great dream.
Mesdames, Messieurs, suite aux catastrophes, le gouvernement de la République a débloqué un montant de près de 200 millions de dollars américains pour faire face aux besoins les plus urgents des populations. De son côté, la communauté internationale a su mobiliser un peu plus de 100 millions. Mon commentaire à cet égard se limitera à signaler le caractère largement insuffisant de cette disponibilité financière par rapport à l'énormité des besoins. Nonobstant la rengaine traditionnellement agitée de la faible capacité d'absorption de l'État. Quoi qu'il en soit, il serait nécessaire d'œuvrer de manière résolue à la mise en place d'une approche fonctionnelle et grandiose en matière de coopération entre la République d'Haïti et la communauté internationale. Il s'agit d'une dimension additionnelle du rêve caressé par la collectivité nationale haïtienne.
Following the disasters, the government released $200 million, US dollars, to address the urgent needs of the population. The international community also mobilized $100 million. I will only note that these amounts are quite limited given the enormous needs of the population. These past disasters highlight once more the need for us to develop a more systematic approach regarding cooperation with the international community.
En effet, ma vision aujourd'hui encore porte sur un ensemble de grands programmes de développement régional, incluant entre autres la région transfrontalière à Haïti et à la République dominicaine, et la région des îles adjacentes, sur la base d'une agriculture multisectorielle, c'est-à-dire intégrant l'agroalimentaire, l'agro-industriel, l'agro-exportateur, l'agro-touristique et l'agro-énergétique. C'est à ces grands chantiers de l'avenir que je pense quand je vous parle de la nouvelle gouvernance en Haïti avec une nouvelle manière de coopérer de la part de la communauté internationale.
As part of the new approach to development, we have to develop a vision where we collaborate on important programs with the Dominican Republic. We should move toward developing programs such as agro-industrial programs, tourism, energy, and food. All of these development programs cannot succeed if we don't have a new governance structure in the country.
Face à ces nombreux défis, nous ne sommes pas tout à fait démunis. En plus de notre talentueuse diaspora, nous avons sur notre sol une population extrêmement jeune, travailleuse, désireuse de se battre pour notre rêve commun d'une Haïti plus prospère et plus égalitaire. Nous avons un patrimoine culturel unique, mais aussi les dernières réserves dans la Caraïbe de plages solitaires, une nature luxuriante et une agriculture certes sous-exploitée, mais avant tout écologique. Voilà, mesdames et messieurs, ce qui me fait croire que le rêve haïtien est possible. The Haitian dream is possible.
Despite all our calamities, we are not totally deprived of resources. We have a vibrant diaspora, a very young population willing and eager to work, that also dream of a prosperous and egalitarian Haiti. We also have a rich cultural capital and natural resources such as beaches, under-exploited agricultural land. That's why, ladies and gentlemen, I believe that the Haitian dream is possible.
Mesdames et messieurs, une action sans vision a peu de chances de réussir. Et une vision sans action reste lettre morte. En fait, Il s'agit de forger un consensus sur un projet de sauvetage et d'affirmation de la nation, sur les approches et les modalités de sa mise en œuvre, les domaines d'intervention prioritaires dans un contexte caractérisé par l'ampleur écrasante des besoins par rapport à la précarité des moyens. Il s'agit également de la nécessité d'enrayer la spirale d'instabilité qui a constitué jusqu'à maintenant un obstacle infranchissable dans l'histoire tumultueuse de notre pays. L'état d'arriération inqualifiable de notre société, de même que les menaces de grande envergure associées à la dégradation de notre environnement, justifient en urgence cet impératif de sauvetage collectif.
Action without vision has little chance to succeed. It is imperative that our project is built on consensus. It is also necessary to end the spiral of instability in the country that has prevented us from moving forward. The state of backwardness of our society, the environmental risks, are all the reasons that we should come together.
Une priorité absolue devra être accordée à l'épineuse problématique environnementale qui risque de réduire à néant toutes les initiatives envisagées ou réalisées, si aucune dynamique de redressement, ou au moins d'endiguement, n'est pas mise en branle. À ce niveau, il nous semble hautement souhaitable d'adopter l'approche qui prône l'utilisation de la réhabilitation de l'environnement comme l'un des axes de réduction de la pauvreté dans la paysannerie. Il demeure certain qu'une exploitation économique judicieuse des ressources naturelles du pays peut s'opérer de manière compatible avec la protection de l'environnement. Tout comme la protection de l'environnement, en plus de son potentiel d'impact spécifique, peut devenir en soi un secteur économique porteur, doté notamment d'un fort potentiel de création d'emplois. À cet égard, il nous paraît opportun d'utiliser une approche de jumelage pour aborder ce dossier qui possède un caractère stratégique et revêt une dimension d'urgence nationale. Le règlement des problèmes qui lui sont inhérents devrait s'opérer dans le cadre d'une mobilisation massive de tous les secteurs de la société sous la forme d'une campagne nationale. Il s'inscrit d'emblée dans une perspective d'économie sociale où figure en bonne place la double dimension de la solidarité et du civisme.
Once more, we need to pay special attention to the environment. Rehabilitating our environment can reduce poverty in the countryside, and also it can create jobs. It can also mobilize the various sectors in the country that are interested in creating the social economy where there would be a level of solidarity and civism among the youth.
Il conviendrait d'assurer une synchronisation entre la tenue de cette activité et la mise en œuvre de la disposition constitutionnelle relative au service civique. Dans cette perspective, la disponibilité de cohortes formées de centaines de jeunes, engagées conjointement avec les moniteurs, monitrices et apprenants-apprenantes, constitue un capital social d'une potentialité insoupçonnée. Il s'agit d'un dispositif de mobilisation mis sur pied pour toucher 3 millions d'apprenants d'apprenantes, 300 000 jeunes, 225 000 formateurs, à raison 75 000 par année. Les jeunes mobilisés pour contribuer à la formation de nos analphabètes pourront être en même temps des planteurs de jatropha, des agents de vaccination, des ouvriers en assainissement et constructeurs de latrines, des gardes forestiers, des agents de sensibilisation et de changement. C'est dans un tel creuset que leur sens de la solidarité et du respect des riches valeurs du pays en dehors sera développé, contribuant ainsi à jeter des ponts susceptibles de renverser les barrières entre les différentes composantes de notre collectivité si fortement marquées par les cloisonnements sociaux et, osons dire le mot, et la ségrégation.
It is important to mobilize the population, the youth, the trainers, to help address literacy problem, our environmental problems, such as helping the providing means for the youth to go outside in the countryside to help in the reforestation, to mobilize and sensibilize the population, and at the same time, for the youth to contribute toward breaking the barriers that have practically closed off the society to the rest of the peasant population.
De même, une véritable alerte environnementale devra être déclarée à brève échéance. Elle emprunta le format de l'opérationnalisation de la mise sur pied du fonctionnement d'un organisme tel une commission interministérielle à l'aménagement du territoire et à l'environnement.
We have to put together a working commission that will address the environmental needs and also the territorial needs of the country.
Compte tenu de la précarité des ressources à sa disposition et de la complexité des innombrables problèmes auxquels elle fait face, la République d'Haïti est tenue d'opérer des choix à la fois judicieux et réalistes quant aux initiatives qu'elle est actuellement en mesure d'assumer dans le cadre de son réaménagement général. Sur cette base, 5 grandes priorités, en raison de leurs puissants effets d'entraînement sur les autres secteurs, devront, à notre avis, être privilégiés durant la période de court terme que nous avons définie, durant la période de moyen terme que nous avons définie pour les 4 à 5 prochaines années. Il s'agit de la refondation de l'État, la dotation du pays en infrastructures, particulièrement en matière d'énergie et de voies de communication routière, la réorganisation du système national d'éducation et de formation, la consolidation de la production nationale, notamment du secteur agricole, lui-même indissociable de la réhabilitation de notre environnement, par l'adoption de dispositions susceptibles de faciliter une certaine progression en matière de sécurité alimentaire. Et enfin, la mise en valeur de notre patrimoine par une politique qui intègre judicieusement tourisme et culture.
In the next 4 to 5 years, we need to focus on the following. Building our communications, roads, infrastructure, reform the education system, consolidate national production, increase national production, especially in the agricultural sector, and also create food security for the population. At the same time, valorize our natural resources and also promote tourism and culture.
Nous accordons la première importance au secteur du développement de la valorisation des ressources humaines. Notre vision du développement national est en effet basée sur le fait que l'homme constitue le capital le plus précieux. En fait, vous le savez mieux que nous, aucun pays au monde n'a su effectuer le virage conduisant à la modernisation sans une dotation adéquate de son système éducatif. L'état de délabrement du système éducatif national et le poids insignifiant du secteur public dans le réseau national des établissements scolaires constituent des expressions sans équivoque de la faillite de l'État traditionnel haïtien et des élites qui l'en dirigent. La rectification en urgence de cette situation, qui représente en même temps une injustice vis-à-vis des secteurs traditionnellement marginalisés, et un obstacle absolu au développement du pays, constitue le point de départ obligatoire de toute démarche de démarrage national. Aucun essor économique effectif ne pourra se réaliser avec une force de travail non qualifiée, particulièrement dans le contexte de compétition sans merci que nous connaissons aussi bien à l'échelle régionale que mondiale. La restructuration de l'enseignement supérieur et universitaire, la multiplication de centres de formation professionnelle et technique et de lycées techniques à la grandeur du territoire national permettront de répondre à cet impératif.
Essentially, we have to reform our education system. As we all know, without human resources, human capital, there is no development. The state of our education system right now doesn't lead to economic development. We have to create the working force through education, especially put it at a level where it can compete with other resources that are at the in the context of the Caribbean and at the world level. We have to restructure the higher education, multiply the centers that train students at the level of professional and technical programs, and also we have to keep in mind that these issues are very important in order to move forward to create the development capacity of the country.
Mesdames, Messieurs, dans la présente conjoncture, la crise alimentaire mondiale semble avoir provoqué l'amorce d'un important virage de la communauté internationale en ce qui a trait au choix des organismes non gouvernementaux comme ses partenaires d'interlocution privilégiée en Haïti. Il est également vrai que cette approche est utilisée à l'endroit de tous les PMA. Quoi qu'il en soit, il importe de considérer comme un sérieux recul le fait d'acheminer la majorité des ressources vers l'aide dite humanitaire en privilégiant le court terme. Il en est de même de la tendance dominante à la gestion de l'aide par les canaux multilatéraux, comme par exemple le PAM ou bien la FAO.
Ladies and gentlemen, the food crisis that took place at the world scale and also in Haiti has created a situation where all the aid that is coming to Haiti is being given to the humanitarian agencies such as PAM, food FAO, Food and Agricultural Organization. We have to, whatever the situation, this has considerably set back the long-term development needs of Haiti.
De la sorte, les acquis arrachés péniblement au cours des deux dernières années en termes d'affirmation du leadership national et d'alignement sur les mécanismes nationaux en conformité avec les principes de la Déclaration de Paris font face à de sérieuses menaces. Il s'avère donc nécessaire de reconstruire un rapport de confiance avec les partenaires internationaux, donneurs traditionnels, partenaires émergents et ceux de la coopération sud-sud. Il devra en être ainsi si nous entendons orienter le dialogue vers des actions structurantes au lieu de s'en tenir à des approches à court terme dictées par une crise alimentaire qui, à l'évidence, ne s'est pas établie sur une base passagère. Depuis le report de l'importante conférence sur le développement économique et social d'Haïti prévue pour le mois d'avril 2008, plusieurs rencontres ont eu lieu. Il y a eu le sommet de Lima, le forum d'Accra, entre autres. Ces rencontres accusent une nette différence thématique par rapport à la conférence qui devait se tenir en avril 2008 en Haïti. La tendance semble donc se confirmer quant à un réalignement de l'aide vers la réponse à la crise alimentaire plutôt que sur la mise en œuvre de la stratégie nationale de la croissance et de la réduction de la pauvreté.
Ladies and gentlemen, the progress that we have made in the past is at stake. We need to revisit the accord that we had made with our partners. Since the cancellation of the April 2008 conference, there have been several other meetings in Accra, Lima, and other places. All of these meetings have confirmed that we have moved back and we have let the international food crisis dictated our strategy in Haiti. So therefore, it is application of the poverty reduction strategy is at stake today, and we need to revisit that.
Mesdames, Messieurs, l'acuité exceptionnelle de la situation haïtienne interpelle presque tous les acteurs engagés à un titre ou l'autre dans ce pays. Il m'importe au plus haut point d'éviter toute vision pessimiste de l'avenir de notre pays. Nonobstant le caractère exigeant de toute entreprise de réaménagement, je nourris la conviction que les outils théoriques et méthodologiques pour s'engager dans une telle démarche existent. Des ajustements s'avéreront nécessaires pour leur utilisation à bon escient. La Déclaration de Paris, le DSNCRP, le document de vision stratégique pour le développement national constituent quelques exemples encourageants. Mais par-dessus tout, la volonté invariable des citoyens et des citoyennes confère la garantie de la disponibilité d'une boussole sûre pour la mise à flot de la barque nationale. Sans céder à la tentation de l'optimisme naïf, il nous faut tous reconnaître qu'il s'agit d'un facteur réconfortant. Merci de votre patience.
Ladies and gentlemen, I still believe that the Empowered Reduction Program that my government had put together, the Declaration of Paris, and the other strategy, the National Development Plan that also we had, our government had put together, are still valid for us to move forward. We hope that all the problems that Haiti had faced previously will not discourage you from working together to move the country toward development. Thank you for your patience.
We'll turn to Stefan Holbert.
Thank you, Bob, for remarks. As you just heard, the situation in Haiti continues to raise in the starkest form the challenge of underdevelopment. Haiti presents a complex history. It is a history heroic in its origin and founding, but marred by a legacy of widespread poverty, violence, inequity, and social division based on skin color, prejudice, class, geography, and region. What Haiti and its friends face is a struggle to overcome history and develop a foundation of governance that can sustain populist-based legitimacy. I define populist-based legitimacy as a system of governance that the population perceives as meeting or seriously attempting to meet its needs and concerns and its hopes for a better future. The development and maintenance of legitimate governance is no small challenge, and it is one that is not confined to Haiti, and it should be added to we in the United States are surely not strangers. Indeed, the international environment in which Haiti is attempting to address underdevelopment and establish sustainable legitimate governance and find its way is a very troubled one, complicated by the current economic crisis. Despite this very challenging history and international environment, there is today hope. Discussion of Haiti emits not despair, but an aura of positive skepticism. Hope and a more positive perspective have been brought about by the existence of a legitimately elected government, the product of a free and fair election, and the establishment of pluralism and an inclusive government that is very much concerned with the development of its people. Also, and importantly, Haiti has in this moment the intention and support of the international community. There is a serious commitment and a much more realistic approach to helping Haiti as it seeks to tackle the long-standing and ongoing severe challenges of governance, national reconciliation, and a dire social and economic situation. The challenge will be focus and long-term commitment. Skepticism exists because there have been several moments of hope and opportunity in the recent past that have been dashed, and the reality is severe and daunting. Mission: what to do? The central mission of the international community should be to support Haiti by focusing on what the World Bank in 2001 termed the good governance deficit. The challenge for the international community is to provide long-term support, and I emphasize long-term support, for the building of Haitian governmental institutions that can be transformed from centralized instruments of extraction for private gain to institutions enabling or provided services in five key sectoral areas critical to developing and maintaining populist-based legitimacy. The ability to enable the delivery of these services is key for the legitimacy of any government, and there is and will be no exceptionalism for Haiti. Those sectors are justice and public safety, education, health, income generation, and infrastructure. On October 27th, this working group convened a session entitled Haiti After the Storms, Weather, and Conflict. At this session, our distinguished colleague Bob McGuire made a very important contribution to our deliberations. Bob has been making this point for 20 to 28 years I have known him, and he has been correct, even if his advice has not been adhered to by policymakers. He stated that it was imperative that development in Haiti support decentralization of services and what Bob terms in his writings depolarization. He also placed an emphasis on a more balanced economic development model. Such a model would include serious attention to the comparative advantage Haiti has in agriculture, both for domestic consumption and export. The existence of a comparative advantage in winter vegetables and tropical fruit has been well researched by the World Bank, and the studies date all the way back to the 1980s. A major difficulty Bob and other development Haitian professionals, Haitian and non-Haitian, seeking to work for the benefit of Haiti have faced is the lack of a governmental partner. As a result, Haiti has been a country of projects in which the basic services mentioned above are available only when provided by external donors and NGOs. The outcome has not been development, but a kaleidoscope attempt at providing a bare minimum of services that barely keep things afloat. Addressing the good governance deficit will require that Haitians and its supporters face and address the sociological and psychological barriers that development experts believe are at the root cause of Haiti's good governance deficit. Neglecting this aspect will, they contend, inhibit the behavioral transformation necessary to maintain peace and foster economic development. These experts state that unless these underlying factors are effectively addressed and made a part of all plans and programs starting at the top, very little will change in Haiti. Specifically, they cite as barriers to change Haiti's psychosocial climate, poisoned at the outset by a rapacious colonialism and slave system that divided families and has separated Haitians from one another based on color and ideology, in which outsiders have at times encouraged. A lack of civic cohesion characterized by demonization of the other and the placing of responsibility for all troubles on outsiders and the other. A distorted and dysfunctional great man concept, as well as practice of leadership that is hostile to a team approach and assumes that the leader is a semi-god outside the restrictions of accountability. What is needed now is a transformational effort emphasizing inclusion. An inclusion that Haitian Ambassador Raymond Joseph often reminds us is noted on the Haitian flag that in unity there is strength. The unity applied constructively would be the unity of all Haitians for an inclusive development that offers a better future for all Haitians. It would also be a development model in which the Haitian people, acting through their legitimate government, seek the help of the international community and with commitment to service and ability determine the proper role in programs for the international community. The goal is to transform Haiti from a country of projects into a country defined by systemic development engendered by populist-based legitimacy. Despite the tragic legacy, the aspiration for good governance is not foreign to many Haitians. On March 29, 1987, the Haitian people voted and ratified a constitution noteworthy for its decentralization of power and separation of powers. Indeed, vast numbers of Haitians aspire to be integrated into the democratic processes envisioned by that constitution, a constitution which requires the consolidation of a democratic spirit and restraint to work, and that whatever the difficulties it presents is a good foundation. The aborted election of November 29, 1987, which I personally witnessed and saw Haitians defying machine gun fire to vote, convinced me of the determination of the Haitian people for transformation and development. The 2006 election and the structuring by President Préval of an inclusive government that has demonstrated concern for the people of Haiti and the development of Haiti has given real hope for a positive departure. Also, Haitians, when freed of the constraints endemic to their country and allowed to benefit from the fruit of their labor, have demonstrated a remarkable entrepreneurial spirit, educational success, and personal success. This has been my observation in Haiti, but also of the Haitian community in the United States. My message in closing is that Haiti can have a better future and can manage the storms if we all do our part. Haitians have a central role and responsibility to develop their institutions in an inclusive and participatory manner. We as friends and partners have a supporting role and responsibility. Together, we can face a very tough reality with courage and approach the challenge with a spirituality that identifies and supports the common good, free of ideological straitjackets. Thank you.
Chuck?
Good morning, and thank you. I'm not a Haiti expert, although I did spend several months there during several research trips back in the 1990s, but I haven't been there in about 10 years. I'm here really because I've launched a new research program that really focuses on state building, in particular in the international actors, and so I was there for a couple of weeks, just got back about 10 days ago. And so I'm going to give you a little bit of a trip report, really, was there with the sponsorship of NYU Center on International Cooperation, where we met with UN officials and some bilaterals and IFIs and Haitian government officials, not enough, and some people in civil society. I'm going to just give you sort of some sketchy impressions of that, but let me just tell you the focus of this was really comes from a focus on the United Nations and its the question of what is it. How do we know when the peacekeeping operation should go home, fundamentally? And more broadly, what is the international community trying to achieve in Haiti, particularly with this presence of a large UN mission? And we all know that stabilization is sort of, you know, the mission is called a stabilization mission. It's unique in that sense. And stabilization, by most accounts, we've seen some significant improvement, and that certainly is part of what the mission is there for. But there's great consensus around the need for something more than that, some institutionalization of stabilization, if you will, and institutionalization of some legitimate form of governments. There's widespread agreement that this is now sort of the standard for peacekeeping presences, the presence of an effective and legitimate state is the mantra that we hear. And so I was there looking into what exactly does that mean, how exactly does the UN and other international actors incorporated that into their work, and where are we on this state-building agenda in Haiti today? I just want to point out that I was concerned about seeing how well this trip report would fit in with the Prime Minister's talk here today. You've just heard a talk that was really focused on ending poverty in Haiti from a gentleman who's trained as an engineer and an agronomist, and the centrality of his talk was about building the state, if I have not misinterpreted it. And so, furthermore, Steve's comments preceding mine also focused centrally on the World Bank strategy, the focus on good governance. So I think it's reflective of this international consensus about the importance of state institutions for development, for conflict mitigation, for anything having to do with Haiti. Reminding you, if you will, since you are all people who are familiar with Haiti, of some of the characteristics and challenges of state building in Haiti. As Bob was just talking with me, Bob McGuire yesterday was mentioning to me, you know, you hear from all these internationals that there's a low level of human resources in Haiti. So that in all the cabinets you have ministers and director levels who are competent, and below that, hardly anybody who has the skills necessary to deliver services, right? So, and of course I heard that, not only from internationals, but from Haitians. And I think that's a really important point to focus on. Secondly, we have a state which historically has had little capacity for generating revenue and for expending that revenue. One of the things that has improved significantly since 2004, to my surprise, was the tax rate. The tax rate started about 7% in 2004, and through a deliberate effort by the IFIs and by Haitian authorities, both during the transitional government and under the Preval administration, has come up to, it'll be about 10.3% this year. That's below the 14% that they had hoped for, and that is the average that's out there, and it probably will stay there for the next couple of years for another reason, which is very pertinent to the understanding and analyzing the situation of sort of international objectives, and particularly the peacekeeping operations objectives. The mentality of the peacekeeping operation very much changed this year because of sort of 2008 is now referred to as a lost year. The political crisis, which didn't just begin in April but really began in December a year ago, culminated in April and then led to stasis for 5 months. And then you had the hurricanes. And so there was a sense in October that only in October are things starting to get moving again, and that the 2008 was a lost year in some sense in terms of institutional movement and in terms of building relationships and moving ahead. And I think it's important to take that into account. Not only, and of course that very much the setback of development. I mean, it's a serious setback of where economically the country is, the impact of these disasters that have occurred in particular, right? That that I think is only beginning to be assessed, really, in terms of its long-term implications. Another thing to remind you of about the Haitian situation is there are a very complicated structure of governance. I'm not sure if this is the same governance structure problems that the former prime minister referred to, but you have the Constitution of 1987 is sort of a mishmash of things drawn on France, which has a powerful presidency but also a powerful prime minister, and the powers, the clarity of the powers between them has confused, which is something that we've seen in the past few weeks under the new, even after the Madame Pierre-Louis was appointed. And so there's been some confusion and some consternation in that relationship, I think it's fair to say, involving particularly the appointment of ministers into the cabinet. And of course, then you have the parliament. And it's a parliament which, as somebody said, thinks that it should be the executive and therefore is very petulant about passing legislation and doing its own legislative tasks. There are remarkably few, according to one account, only 5 major laws were passed besides budget laws in this last year by the parliament. It is remarkable how much debate and lengthy debate each of these legal projects has, and how, in fact, many legislative projects are stalled. The international community has a list of 100 laws they think are on the docket that have been stalled. Some of those include sort of wish lists, but at least a third of them are actual legal draft laws that have not been acted upon. And the concentration of power, and so this is confusing relationships, but also a concentration of power in the executive. That means that the president himself needs to sign off on things that are remarkably that are remarkable to outsiders that would ever rise to the level of the president signing off on. So it's a level of personalism in the practice of power that means it takes a lot of time for things to happen. There's some explanations for why things take a lot of time to happen in Haiti. And this is one of the themes, you know, this sort of dynamic that was there in the 1990s is still very much present when you talk to internationals, all these well-intentioned state builders that are in the United Nations system, and they're smart and they're capable and they're dedicated, some of them. And but you know, you still hear this same rhetoric that really doesn't that is, you know, we're having to push and push and push, and it happens in every ministry. It happens with the police. It happens with the justice. You hear it with the corrections. You hear it with the community. But we have to push and push and push, and the Haitians are slow and. Bureaucrats have entrenched interests that resist these things. So that dynamic is still very much present. And you say in that, well, where is ownership? What happened to ownership? And so let me move on and sort of make a few remarks about, just one remark about ownership. And that is that, you know, what is the state building plan for Haiti? And let me go back to Mr. Alexis' comments about the importance of the PRSP. In fact, Haiti had a process of developing a PRSP that is better than many of the ones that I'm familiar with in other post-conflict countries. It had more involvement, more consultation. It is more comprehensive in the sense that it includes police and justice in a significant way, not as significant as it should be in my view, but nevertheless, you know, this is stuff that 5 years ago, these are big advances over the past 5 years. The other thing is it was completed relatively quickly with all of this happening. Of course, there was a reason for that, and that is that there's an IMF condition to get debt relief, and one of the three is that the PRSP has to be acted upon for a year. So the government was very aware that it needed to act quickly to get that thing done. So what you have is actually some very positive process here in the PRSP. You have less of that in other plans that are out there. The other thing I'll just draw your attention to is that in the latest report of the Secretary General to the Security Council on the Haitian mission, there's a list of benchmarks that they have in different places that I would call your attention to. It's unusual. It was sort of a last-minute decision by the mission to do this, and the Security Council liked it to their surprise. But it's actually a very positive step, I think. And gives some sense of thinking about institutionalization that, in my view, is overdue. Let me just make a couple of other comments on ownership. You know, the police reform plan is something that was developed with consultation with important Haitian police officials, drafted by an international, but still seems to have a good deal of ownership and buy-in from the Haitian government. And it's an area where I think, you know, we could nitpick, and I, as someone who's specialized in police reform, would be happy to nitpick about how it's gone. But overall, positive positive process and positive progress and a serious long-term plan and a commitment to that plan that seems to be shared by Haitians. I could talk more about that, but one of the things I'll say about ownership before I leave that point is that I still think that this is still one of the great challenges for, I mean, still the civil society, when the PRSP still hasn't been adopted. In fact, there's discussion of revising it. And so this is, leads me to another point that everyone seems to make, which is that, you know, once you get plans going, you know, you have a government that lasts a maximum of 5 years. But usually some crisis comes along, change of government, a natural disaster, some international, you know, force majeure that comes along and knocks these plans off pace. And this is sort of the tale of these cyclical patterns of state reform that are part a central part of the challenge of state building in a place like Haiti. And how do you get around that is, I think, a crucial question that we dealt with and I can reflect upon. But there are many different theories about whether this is at the top, this is something that has to do with Haitian culture, whether this has to do with practices of the international community that are not sufficiently consultative. And I particularly think that that is true, that the depth and breadth of consultation still is not where it should be. And that leads me to another point, which is that the challenge of institutionalization, let me just back up. When I went to Haiti in 1995 for the first time, I heard from all my professors back then at Stanford that, you know, state is very weak in Haiti. It's not like the rest of Latin America. Well, what I found when I got to Haiti is that it wasn't just true of the state. It was true of civil society. It was true of the political parties. That lack of institutionalization is an important, serious challenge for people who talk about incorporating civil society. It's and so this sort of mantra about incorporating civil society and consulting civil society, well, who is civil society? So the institutionalization of civil society is a crucial challenge for state building, in fact, ironically, in a place like Haiti. And I don't think we have very good answers for that. The other thing that I wasn't going to mention decentralization, but it was so emphasized. There was two. I'll just say two things about decentralization, which is one of the things that's in very much emphasized in the UN's approach to doing state strengthening in Haiti. It's decentralization and deconcentration of services. Institutionalization. There's a real danger that decentralization will decentralize authoritarian, unaccountable governance in a place like Haiti because of the lack of institutionalization at the local level. And so without institutions of oversight, accountability to help at that level, then it's not necessarily a positive step. It's not clear to me, at least. I defer to others with greater expertise. But in my experience in Central America, it certainly was a danger there and was part of the problem, decentralization that was pursued by AID and others. But fortunately for skeptics, the second point about decentralization is there's hardly any interest in moving on decentralization at the level of Haitian government or elite. And it's sort of the single issue that most smacks of international commitment and rhetoric, which draws, of course, on the 1987 Constitution, it's important to point out, and draws on a commitment to supporting people at the local level, but in fact contrasts sharply with the level of movement and commitment at the, you know, if you want to talk about ownership, there is no ownership of the decentralization issue, as far as I can tell. I'm going to set aside many of the comments I was going to make about the UN, where I was going to sort of talk about the sound in theory but signifying nothing of the integrated missions concept in Haiti, which was really quite disappointing. I'm going to also not talk about my disappointment in the country team and sort of not only the sort of reluctance to engage in urgent action, but the sort of incompetence of some of the of what I encountered there within UNDP and elsewhere. But just let me make a couple of final comments. One is, you know, we talked to some folks who said, you know, it's important to think about what sort of state, what's realistic, and thinking about what sort of state you are supporting in terms of a vision. And let me use the example of education. Education, 85% of Haitian primary students are in private schools. 90% of the schools are private schools. It is unrealistic to think that you can build an effective public education system at the primary level in the short term. And what's more a priority and more urgent is thinking about a regulatory state that can actually effectively regulate the private schools that are out there. And that actually is a great gap, not only in education, but in other areas where delivery of state services is very weak across the board, right? So thinking about and strengthening regulation and oversight as a priority, if it's unrealistic to invest in operational capacity, is another question. Second point, shocking to me how little was done in terms of thinking about institution building by the UN system in particular from 2004 to 2008. I'll just give you an example. Most of these programs only started in 2006. Now, there may be good reason for that, because it's not clear how much you want to do during a transitional government. But in fact, it's important to think about what things does it make sense to start to do during a transitional government, and other things that need to wait. I think too little was done during the transitional government in terms of state capacity. Another example. Three UNDP officials I talked to. All of them arrived between December of 2007 and March of 2009. I asked, what programs happened between 2004 and 2006? And their answer, well, I don't know, that was before I was here. And these are people who profess to have a long-term development strategy, and yet their only optic is for the last few months. And it's just really very disappointing in terms of the international optic. Two quick comments. My time is up, but I want to make two quick comments. One of them has to do with civil service. Hardly any activity is focused on building or strengthening the civil service. Haiti does not have an institution dedicated to training civil service. If I'm not mistaken, the new Center for National Research and Formation that Mr. Alexi is the head of might have that as part of its mandate and vision. The only document that really addressed this and tackled this was the state reform plan that Mr. Alexi's government developed, but which is now, again, another example, is now in uncertain terms because it's not clear that the new prime minister is picking up that state reform plan. And so here we are, another 6 months, maybe a year lost. We're going to look back at it and revise it maybe, and it'll take another year before we come up with a new state reform plan. That sort of thing is sort of the dynamic of the state reform effort there. And the last thing I'll say is that there's some discussion that is important to me as someone who really cares about institutions, but I was called into question my visit there by people who said, you know, there's the cycles and the ineffectiveness of institutional reform that we've seen for the last 15 years, let's say, at least, in Haiti, is contrasted with certain infrastructure that could be built in some sense. And so that there's a new sort of thinking that, you know, maybe money should be dedicated to infrastructure in ways that can at least provide some roads and markets and more traditional kind of development think that that is important, and that the President Breval is emphasizing also recently. And it's a debate that I think merits attention. I'll stop there. Thank you.
Thanks very much. I'd like to begin our discussion. Give you a chance to get out of the way. I'd like to begin our discussion by asking a couple of people here to make opening comments, and then we'll open the floor for questions. I'd like to start with Bob McGuire, who's here this year as a Jennings Randolph Fellow. He's the director of the Haiti program at Trinity College. And then Mark Schneider, the International Vice President of the International Crisis Group. So you make a brief comment, and another brief comment, and then we'll open the floor.
I'll keep it brief. You want to stay here?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to stand up?
Do you want to come to the mic? Come to the mic.
I'm used to talking to this class.
Another professor, watch out.
I was thinking back while I was hearing former Prime Minister Alexi speak of our last meeting, where I don't know if Yvonne's here. Yvonne, are you here from the World Bank?
She didn't come today.
Yvonne Cicada spoke about the fact that when she traveled to Haiti with the World Bank President Robert Zoellick, that they spoke about the need to refocus from hit and run solutions to medium and long term solutions, and that struck me coming out of the Prime Minister's speech as something very important as well. And I think they stressed as well the fact that they were impressed by the government of Haiti not viewing itself as a victim, but rather wanting to take this opportunity of extreme disaster to move forward and try to search new paradigms. In that regard, I was also struck by Prime Minister Alexei's talk, and the commentaries were excellent as well, I should say. Super. But the focus on not just decentralization per se, but on the youth, on the environment, on putting people to work. I mean, that in Haiti would be a new paradigm as well. Nobody has really ever focused on that. And in that regard, a comment perhaps after Mark speaks, if you would care to comment on this. I know while you were Prime Minister, we had a dialogue about the possibility of establishing some sort of a national service corps mechanism that would accomplish a number of goals together, helping young people get a greater stake in their society, engaging in the rehabilitation, the agricultural production. And in fact, the parallel we discussed was that with, which is something very a la mode in Washington right now, which is the New Deal type programs and the CCC and the WPA type thing, which we're talking about a lot in our country now as well. We had this conversation a year ago. Mm-hmm. And I've noted that your successor, Michel Pierre-Louis, has also mentioned this idea of a National Service Corps. And I'm just wondering if you could maybe elaborate a little bit on that in the context of trying to find a way to have that bold initiative that you mentioned and that the UN is kind of looking for, some sort of a game changer, something that can really change the uptick in Haiti and move things forward. So I'll end
it. Okay. Mark?
I am going to use the microphone.
Go on.
I just found I must say that there is a certain deja vu about the discussion. We have been talking about institution building in Haiti as a fundamental issue. We've been talking about the issue of ownership for at least 15 years, that any kind of development plan that's going to work in Haiti has to be owned by the Haitians, but not just a part of the Haitians. And how you move beyond the power structure in a way that encompasses those who are outside Port-au-Prince in ways that they feel part of this process is essential. And I guess the one thing that I would say is I'd like, as we think about how we move in this direction, to recognize that yes, the state has to be more capable, more of handling resources, of defining priorities based on the political process. But between now and then, Haiti still has to add new jobs, begin to build those bridges that were destroyed after the hurricane, put farm-to-market roads back in place, reconstruct irrigation systems, begin to build some of those schools, and get those some of the children who were going to inadequate private schools, yes, back into perhaps better private schools, but back into schools. So it seems to me that at least right now, my first concern is, what are we going to do between now and January to prepare for a donors conference that should take place early next year, after President Obama takes office here, and after there's a consensus in Haiti that a recovery plan incorporates some of the longer-term transformative ideas that you're talking about, but that gives Haiti some immediate building blocks to move forward. Because if not, then I'm afraid that something that we didn't hear very much about, although Chuck talked about it a bit, the political negative political dynamic in Haiti could well set in, and we could be back in the December to September hiatus in which nothing happens and Haiti stagnates. And so I think it's crucially important that we, together with our Haitian colleagues, think about how you move forward on a strategy now that builds the elements of institution building, capacity, and ownership, but moves forward on a clear strategy so that by February and March, Haitians see things moving forward to build back from where they were before the hurricanes hit and begin looking at the longer term issues that we've heard discussed here this morning.
Thanks very much. I'd like to open. Yeah. Okay, sorry. I'd like to open the floor for questions. We'll take about three questions in a row, and then we'll allow for answers. I'd like to ask that everybody ask their questions in English. Our friend Francois here is going to be our translator. So who wants to go first? You? Yep. Yeah? All right, one here, one there, and one there. Okay.
Hey, Rudolf Boulos, Senator of Haiti. Mr. Prime Minister, there's a question that's been burning my belly, like the hunger that's burning the children's belly in Haiti today. Why didn't you pick up on the recommendation of the Senate of January 2008 to reduce the tax on rice and flour so that the people could be in a better position?
Thank you. Over here.
Maureen Chaparral, Congressional Research Service. Steve, thank you all for your very interesting discussion. Steve, you summed up, I think, what a lot of people felt, that Haiti needs to have a cultural shift from centralized government that operates for personal gain to a government that's decentralized and operating for the business public. This is a long-term and kind of vaguer kind of goal, cultural change. Do any of the speakers have concrete ideas how that can be achieved?
I think that's a darn good question, and since I raised it, I'll try it.
We're getting ahead of it.
I'm sorry.
That's all right. One more. Margaret.
Thank you, Margaret Hayes. My question is related, so I'll be
just tell
very
me when.
Brief. What will you? Can you please, Mr. Prime Minister, describe the degree of consensus within the leadership in Haiti for undertaking the kind of plan that you have proposed or that's described in the PRSP? Because I would hope that your speech could be made much more often in Haiti than in here in the United States, because it is Haitians who will have to.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Do you want to respond?
Question. Nous avons pas réduit la taxe du
huile. Pour répondre à la question du sénateur Boulos.
To answer the question that Senator Boulos asked.
Je dois dire que personnellement, je ne m'inscris pas du tout dans une économie haïtienne et qui soit extravertie. Elle est totalement tournée vers l'extérieur. Je suis pour la recapitalisation de la production nationale, la recapitalisation de la production agricole du pays, la recapitalisation de la production alimentaire. Donc, je ne serai pas du tout, en fait, je ne peux pas vous suivre sur cette trajectoire. La mienne, c'est aujourd'hui saisir les opportunités que nous avons actuellement pour regonfler, en quelque sorte, le secteur agricole du pays, le secteur alimentaire. Si on avait fait ça, si on n'avait pas suivi les politiques qui ont été, qu'on a appliquées depuis des années, c'est-à-dire, on a enlevé toutes les barrières tarifaires. Et ça n'a rien résolu. Donc, je pense que nous devons revenir. Surtout, je crois que la situation mondiale actuelle nous y invite. Et Haïti doit refaire son tissu, n'est-ce pas, en fait, productif. Et notamment, la production agricole et alimentaire.
I don't believe in an economy that totally depends on the outside forces. I believe in an economy that should protect our national production. We have to go back to protect our agricultural resources. And if we had done that, we would have continued to open up the economic process in Haiti instead of relying on its own national production. In fact, right now, as we can see, the world is going back toward protecting their own resources inside the country. And if we had lowered the taxes on rice and flour, that would have opened up the country further and undermine the agricultural production. The second question.
Yeah.
question c'est que Haïti besoin. Je trouvais que est-ce que un projet concret pour arriver à changer le changement culturel là pour faire dans Haïti.
Je ne sais pas si c'est le bon endroit où je dois dire en fait la vérité qui est la mienne.
I don't know if it is the right place to tell the truth that I believe in.
Mais je dirais quand même que on sait ce qu'on doit faire au pays.
I would say we know what we have to do in the country.
Vous savez, on répète souvent que Haïti est le pays le plus étudié.
We said that Haiti is the most studied country in the world.
Je crois ce qui est en jeu aujourd'hui.
What
est-ce que on va continuer à travailler avec cette même classe politique?
Are we going to work with the same political class?
Qui en quelque part a échoué?
Which has failed?
Est-ce qu'on va travailler pour faire émerger une nouvelle classe politique au pays?
Are we going to work toward a new class of elite or class of leadership in Haiti?
Je crois que c'est au moment où nous parlons, c'est la question fondamentale qui se pose en Haïti.
This is the fundamental question that we have to address in Haiti.
Et nous pensons que aujourd'hui, si je prends par exemple la question de la diaspora, ça fait longtemps qu'on aurait dû, disons en fait, résoudre le problème de la diaspora.
We should have solved the diaspora problem long time ago.
Mais on continue encore à faire du marronnage.
But we keep going around it without addressing.
Or, Haïti ne peut pas vivre sans sa diaspora.
Haiti cannot live without its diaspora.
Je ne suis pas de ceux qui pensent que c'est l'aide internationale qui va aider Haïti à se développer.
I don't think only international aid will help Haiti develop.
On a besoin de l'aide internationale.
We need international help.
On a besoin d'une aide internationale qui respecte justement les priorités que nous autres nous avons définies.
We need international help that will respect our priorities that we have
defined. Et qui s'aligne, n'est-ce pas, en fait, sur notre propre vision.
That is aligned with our own vision.
Donc, cependant, je crois que ce qui nous manque le plus aujourd'hui,
what is missing today,
c'est une classe moyenne.
Is a middle class.
Cette classe moyenne qui est à l'étranger.
That is basically abroad.
Comme les ressources humaines qualifiées qui sont à l'étranger.
Also the human resources, human capital that are
comment
abroad.
Nos amis, entre guillemets,
how our friends
de la communauté internationale
from the international community
peuvent nous aider à résoudre ce problème concret.
Can help us address this concrete problem.
Thank you very much, Steve.
Okay.
Respond to the
question.
Right? That's wrong, right? What? Steve, the third question was for you.
Yeah,
right?
It's for him. Yeah, he's going to take this question.
Sure.
Go ahead. Yes.
A Marine's question. It's going to sound very simple. My answer is leadership. Leadership by example. At all levels. I'll give an example that may sound small. Ambassador Joseph may recall. There was a meeting about a year and a half ago at the 4-H Center out here with President Preval and the Haitian community. I was honored to be asked to be there, and I was there, and Bob, you were there too. And what we observed was different. President Preval had the stage, and instead of doing what I've seen most Haitian leaders do, he didn't dominate the stage. He turned the stage over to others who were in the delegation, business people, members of parliament. Small step, symbolic. I think it was important. It registered, certainly registered with me as something different, maybe a hope. Because I've been dealing with Haiti, forgive me, for 32 years, and I look for any rivulet of hope.
Yeah, I think we were all surprised when President Preval spoke for a few minutes, and then he said, well, I've said all I have to say. Anybody else want to speak? And there was this stunned silence in the room. And he sat down, and then other people got up and spoke. But it was really quite a revealing moment. Could I have a couple of more questions? Do we have a couple of more questions?
Yes, Jim Morrell, the Haiti Democracy Project, basically for Steve, you spoke realistically of the existence of bad governance, poor governance in Haiti, and I think you call it good governance deficit. And my question really is if you have any, in the back of your mind at least, a strategy to address this, do you think that the correction can come through elections? In that case, how do you evaluate the current pace of preparation for elections? Or do you think it's going to take a bit more of an intrusive approach from the international community? If so, do you see any inklings of that in the international community?
Okay. We'll take a second question. Please, in the back.
My question goes specifically to the former Prime Minister. In January 2007, you hosted generously Dr. Bill Gartman and a group of graduate students, professional students from Johns Hopkins University. At that meeting, you expressed confidence and optimism that Haiti would achieve universal education by 2015. I'm wondering, about 2 years later, do you still have that optimism? And secondly, when it comes to implementing these sorts of reforms that all of you are talking about, I'm wondering what are the motivations or incentives that are currently in structure or that could be in structure to encourage Haitian leaders, for example, to take the big steps needed and to fight the system that so far has perpetuated the status quo.
Thank you. Okay, we'll start with Stefan, and then we'll go to the Prime Minister.
On whether elections make a democracy, no. Elections do not a democracy make. You can have elections, and if you don't have the institutions and some societal consensus on the rules of the game, you have a real problem. In fact, you can make things worse, in my view. So I think that answers. On the grand strategy, I'd have to do some work. I'd really have to talk with a lot of people. I have to particularly go back to Haiti for a while and talk to an awful lot of people. I wouldn't presume to provide a strategy.
Okay.
Oui, premier bâti, c'est
le éducation pour tous.
Oui, je prends ici occasion en fait pour vous saluer personnellement. Effectivement, je l'avais rencontré j'avais rencontré un groupe d'étudiants de John Hopkins et en Haïti à mon bureau.
I'd like to once more greet you, and I remember meeting you and a number of students from John Hopkins.
Je suis un éternel optimiste, et je viens de le dire en fait dans mon speech.
I am an eternal optimist, and I said it in my speech.
Vous savez, en 1986-87, j'étais doyen à la faculté d'agronomie et de médecine vétérinaire.
In 1986-87, I was the dean of the faculty of agronomy.
Et à ce moment-là, on recevait des étudiants canadiens et des étudiants français.
At that time, we had students from Canada and France.
Qui venaient passer une année à cette faculté.
Spent a year studying at the faculty.
Et les crédits qu'ils avaient obtenus leur étaient reconnus par leur université d'attache.
And their credits were recognized by the universities at home, home universities.
Tout ceci pour dire que Haïti est capable.
This is telling that Haiti could.
De changer. Son image.
Can change its image.
On peut arriver à, comme certains de nos devanciers en fait l'ont fait, on peut arriver à étonner le monde.
We can surprise the world.
Le problème, c'est la question, c'est comment on peut arriver à lancer un mouvement qui permette aux institutions.
The question is, how do we get all the institutions?
De pouvoir réellement se raffermir, et ainsi de pouvoir en fait réaliser la mission qui est la leur.
And capable to realize their mission.
Je crois que c'est l'enjeu en fait qui est devant nous aujourd'hui.
This is what at stake right now.
Par exemple, comment on peut arriver
For example, how can we
à faire en sorte que on ait dans ce pays 4 à 5 bons partis politiques qui fonctionnent.
That we can have 4 or 5 functional political parties in Haiti.
C'est aujourd'hui il n'y a pas de parti politique sérieux en Haïti.
In Haiti, we don't have very serious political parties.
Les partis politiques appartiennent à leurs fondateurs.
The political parties belong to their founders.
Or, comment produire la démocratie? Comment développer le pays sans pouvoir s'assurer sur des institutions aussi importante que les partis politiques?
How do you build democracy if you cannot assure of institutions such as political parties?
Voilà le genre de défi que nous avons à relever.
That we have to meet.
Et disons pour la solution en fait duquel nous invitons l'ensemble de la classe politique du pays.
We invite all the political actors in the country.
C'est l'une des raisons qui explique que après avoir laissé la primature,
That's why after I left
avec un groupe d'amis qui étaient surtout dans mon cabinet.
A group of people were in my cabinet.
Nous avons pris l'initiative de créer le CNRF.
We decided to create the CNRF.
Le Centre National de Recherche et de Formation.
Center for Research and Training.
C'est une espèce de, chez vous, vous appelez ça un think tank.
It is a think tank.
Mais c'est une structure, une technostructure pour supporter techniquement et intellectuellement l'action politique en Haïti.
It's a structure to support political action in Haiti.
Qui est ouvert à tous les courants politiques. Ce n'est pas uniquement une affaire de l'espoir.
Which is open to everyone. It doesn't only belong to l'espoir.
Donc, nous essayons de voir comment nous pouvons offrir aux parlementaires, aux élus locaux, aux partis politiques, un environnement où des questions aussi importantes peuvent être abordées,
an environment where questions are very important to the country can be raised,
en essayant de trouver un plus petit dénominateur commun.
In finding a common denominator for all of us.
J'étais optimiste sur la question de la scolarisation universelle.
I was optimist for the universal education for all.
Je ne cesse pas d'être optimiste.
I haven't stopped being optimistic.
Même si je reconnais que l'instabilité en Haïti,
even though I recognize instability in Haiti,
met en échec tous les beaux projets que l'on peut échafauder.
Can jeopardize all the beautiful projects that we can think of.
Donc il nous faut véritablement travailler sur la question de la stabilité.
We have to work toward having stability in the country.
C'est, je crois, que la condition sine qua non.
This is the conditions
qui doit permettre au pays de pouvoir se développer.
That will help the country develop.
Mais je voudrais quand même, même si ceci n'a pas été dit directement,
I would like to add,
je voudrais quand même mentionner que Haïti,
Haiti
n'est pas un pays de violence.
It's not a violent
physique,
country.
En fait, violence politique, comme on le dit en général.
As they usually say.
Nous avons dans la région, il n'y a pas besoin de citer en fait le nom de ces pays-là.
We have countries that are more violent.
D'autres pays où véritablement on connaît des violences vraiment assez intenses.
It's very intensive.
La violence fondamentale, c'est cette misère dans laquelle croupit la grande majorité de la population.
The violence in Haiti is the poverty where people are living in.
Et c'est ce qu'il faut adresser à travers les différents projets.
And this is what we need to address with all the projects.
Notamment à travers la scolarisation universelle.
Especially the education for all.
Well, thank you very much. Our time is up this morning. I would particularly like to thank the former Prime Minister for being with us. I think we all benefited from his remarks. I'd like to thank our two panelists, Stefan Holbrit and Charles Call. I'd like to thank our commentators and all of you who asked questions and all of you who were here this morning. Next Tuesday, we're having another meeting of the Haiti Working Group. The former Justice Minister and current Special Advisor to President Préval, René Malgoire, will be with us. We'll have another panel of experts, and we'll be talking about the challenge of legal reform in Haiti. Hopefully when you get back to your offices, you'll see on your computers an invitation to that event, but it will be here on Tuesday afternoon at 2 o'clock. So we'd like to have you all come back. Anyway, thank you very much, and we'll see you again soon, I hope.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you.